I have spent much time the past several weeks reflecting upon the fourth principle. While it is an affirmation and an endorsement of a certain mode of spiritual searching, it speaks also of powerful tensions and dualities. I found it useful myself to apply this principle to diverse life, family, political, and cultural situations, all of which call upon us to weave together truth and meaning, and to balance the powers of freedom and responsibility. I remember fondly going camping with our children and sometimes their friends. Responsibility ranged from taking along enough eggs, sausage, bread, syrup, etc., for the picnic table cooking and serving of brunch. And then the designation of cleanup duties with sufficient freedom of choice granted to the participants. These trips to Southern Illinois included the freely made decisions about where to hike, or whether to play at the beach, or blending the teens and the grade schoolers, and the sharing of responsibility for safety and positive ties among those age groups. When at a family campground or cabin, the fusion of freedom and responsibility helped make the moment more powerful and enjoyable for adults and also the young ones. I recall this vividly as a child traveling with my family to Wisconsin for the summer, along with how much I still value my memories of being a parent on such travels. Freedom and responsibility overlap to create a deep form of health, one that blends order and spontaneity, play and work, risks and safety. When these overlaps do not occur in a family, adverse consequences are far more likely. When I was in psychology practice, I took family histories from teen or adult clients. And when I took that history, I ascertained who were the people, family or neighbors, who could be trusted to give protection as well as affection. Recent research has found that youth with adverse childhood experiences have fewer adverse consequences of that in later life when they report having more trusted adults around them in childhood. Again, the positive blending of responsibility and freedom between children and adults. It is likely also the truth of a difficult childhood may be difficult to face and explore later in life. Yet its meaning and its healing may emerge only when the stories and wounds in the family among generations are found after a shared search that is free and responsible. Thus, this principle speaks not just about searches, but also pilgrimages, explorations, and deep appreciations of persons, important yet flawed. In similar fashion, our flawed nation and its historical tragedies require us to exert our freedom of reflection and investigation to grasp the deep truths of history and their meanings today, freshly appreciated. And ultimately, this may facilitate our freely assuming responsibility for doing what we can to heal old wounds and awakening as a nation to revive what is injured among those who are underprivileged and injured by past abuse, futility, and denigration. As the philosopher George Santayana wrote, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. We must remain free to know and remember the truth of the past and how its meaning will underscore our responsibility for amends and for not repeating moral errors again and again. We must have the resolve to be free to take the responsibility that will keep our greater family of nation and of household safe by the proper use of facts to find the deep meanings that can heal. Be well, be good.
When I first learned about the 7 UU principles as a new Unitarian Universalist in college, I learned about them using this image. The archway is made up of 7 pieces. The pillars are the first and 7th principle, which we often call on easily and readily when explaining our faith, inherent worth and dignity, and to the interconnectedness of all things. But the 4th principle, is the keystone. It's the center. Our 4th Unitarian Universalist principle states that we covenant to affirm and promote a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. I love the keystone-like balance that is repeated in this principle. When we talk about the 4th principle, we often talk about the word search. But I want to hold the 2 halves of that search in balance: free and responsible, truth and meaning. Next week, Reverend Leah will explore the 2nd half of that balancing act, truth and meaning. And we will focus today on the free and responsible part. So what does it mean in our faith tradition to be free? The 20th century Unitarian Universalist theologian, professor, and minister James Luther Adams wrote about what he named the 5 smooth stones of religious liberalism. Each of these stones are a metaphor for the simple and unassuming power of our faith, in the spirit of the stones used by David against the giant Goliath in the Hebrew scriptures. One of these stones is, all relations between persons ought ideally to rest on mutual free consent and not coercion. I'll say that again. All relations between persons ought ideally to rest on mutual free consent and not coercion. Another way to say that is, you don't have to be here. We are in community freely. No one is or should be forcing you. We are mutually and freely choosing to be together. Additionally, as Unitarian Universalists, we have another kind of freedom. We have freedom of belief. We aren't going to tell you what to believe. And while that freedom feels like a relief to many, it can also feel heavy and hard at times, especially when things feel uncertain. But that's how freedom works. And then the balance. Freedom in our 4th principle is balanced with responsibility. In terms of belief, people often say that Unitarian Universalists can believe whatever we want. That's our freedom talking. But I would argue that that's not exactly true. We can't believe whatever we want. We must temper our beliefs to agree with our own experiences, with the rhythms of nature, with the teachings of science and the great prophets of peace. Our beliefs, in other words, are informed by our 6 sources of inspiration, which we talked about last week on Easter. We don't believe what we want. We believe what we must. And in the free communities that we form, we are accountable to each other. This accountability gives us strength. It provides another source for inspiration and belief. My own experiences might differ from yours, but if we are in accountable relationship, my view of the world will expand and shift because of that accountability. Freedom. We can do what we want, say what we want. But that means that other people are also free to have their own reactions. This means there might be consequences for our actions. It means accountability is freedom tempered by responsibility. And as I've been thinking about all of this, it makes me think of that term that's coming up a lot in popular culture, cancel culture. Cancel culture is the idea that there is a widespread use of cancellation or social media backlash that shuns people because of their beliefs or actions. A lot of times this cancellation is superficial. Within a few days, the person is back up and at it again. But in some cases, this cancellation has happened with severe consequences. Adrienne Marie Brown, who is the author of Emergent Strategy, Pleasure Activism, and other books on the power of community activism and movement building, has a new short book out exploring cancel culture entitled We Will Not Cancel Us. She uses the term cancellation, cancel culture, and call outs interchangeably. Brown writes, quote, call outs feel most powerful when they are used with their tactical intention. For those with less positional, political, economic, or other power to demand accountability to stop harm and abuse. She also writes, call-outs have a long history as a brilliant strategy for marginalized people to stand up to those with power. Call-outs or cancellations have been a way to bring collective power to bear on corporations, institutions, and abusers on behalf of individuals or oppressed people who cannot stop injustice and get accountability on their own. There are those who are out of alignment with life, consent, dignity, and humanity who will only stop when a light is shined onto their inhumane behavior. End quote. This happened with Harvey Weinstein, as we read earlier, and R. Kelly with the hashtag MeToo movement. The justice system was finally forced to act when public pressure got too heavy. It happened to a lesser degree with the hashtag and boycott Oscars So White, which was begun by April Rain and popularized by Will and Jada Pinkett Smith and other actors. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences still has a long way to go to make meaningful change. But within a few years, there has been an 8% improvement in racial and gender diversity. Additionally, the removal of Confederate monuments around the country have been the result of public pressure. As Adrienne Marie Brown states, cancellation can be a powerful tactic and have a long history as a brilliant strategy when it is used as intended. But there are two ways that people are using the term cancellation or cancel culture. One is the way that Adrienne Marie Brown or Alexandra de Amore talks about it in the reading we heard earlier. True consequences for true harmful behavior. The collective response of harmed people bringing consequences to bear on those who have done harm. But another way that that term is being used is by those who claim it is about political correctness, creating a groupthink, or squashing free speech. There is some claim that any change to social norms is cancellation. For example, recently, the family of Dr. Seuss, Theodore Seuss Geisel, removed a handful of his many books from print. This happens all the time in publishing, and many, many more of his books are still indeed in print, including the beloved ones like Cat in the Hat, Oh, the Thinks You Can Think, The Lorax, and more. But the few books that were pulled from publication contained content that many people had perceived and named as racist. Seems like a good idea. Why keep books on the shelves that have racist caricatures in them? Times change, we learn and grow. Nobody has canceled Dr. Seuss. His family and publishers have chosen to use their freedom of publication with responsibility. That's all, and that's a good thing. But there is a shadow side to cancellation, to cancel culture. It can be a quick knee-jerk reaction to any perceived disagreement, and it is heightened by social media, and it has the capacity to reduce people to their one biggest mistake. It avoids any true accountability or connection that could allow for growth and responsibility. Adrienne Marie Brown states when talking about this kind of cancellation, the kind happening in community among people who are working toward the same goals, who are quick to cancel each other for a misstep or a disagreement in philosophy, for not being woke enough. She says, quote, "We have to recognize that we are on dangerous territory that is not aligned with a transformative justice vision when we mete out punishments in place of consequences. Or when we issue consequences with no inquiry, no questions, no acceptance of accountability, no process, no time for learning and unlearning that's necessary for authentic change. Just instant and often unsatisfactory consequences." End quote. She says call-outs or cancellations are a way of pulling an emergency brake. But call-outs need to be used specifically for harm and abuse, and within movement spaces should be deployed as a last option. She says transformative justice is relational. It happens at the scale of communities. And call-outs now happen at the scale of viral threads among strangers. Trevor Noah, the comedian and host of The Daily Show, discusses this tension and his problem with cancel culture in a conversation that he had on the radio show The Breakfast Club. Here's a clip from that conversation. I want to thank our intern minister, Allie, for sharing that clip with me. She used it in the Wellspring class that she taught last fall on calling in versus calling out. Trevor Noah talks in that clip about the human response to being excluded when, as he says, your back is against the wall and it feels like people have ganged up on you. The response to that is not remorse or transformation. The response is aggression. Adrienne Marie Brown says in her book, quote, "If the kind of call-outs that are sweeping online spaces and spilling into real life actually stopped harm, resolved conflict, ended supremacy, transformed people, I'd be a call-out machine. I love functional tools. But what happens more often is that people step back. They leave altogether. Or they double down and return with even more egregious acts of flagrant harm. If the goal is transformation, and I do hope it is for all of us, if the goal is a changed heart, a continuous life journey of growth and learning and improvement, then there must be accountability. As I think about what it means to abide together in a free and responsible faith, the word accountability repeats over and over in my mind. Our ancestors had another word. They called it covenant. Covenant is about relationship. It's more than just friendship or like-mindedness. Covenant is about what James Luther Adams said, mutual consent and not coercion. It is also about being bound in relationship, bound together in relationship, commitment, both across our human plane of existence, but also connected together vertically to our highest values or that which we aspire to, that which some people call God. We must be free, but also accountable, which happens best when we come together in community. The truth is, in our capitalist, materialist society, we often are taught to prioritize comfort, not transformation. Even when we come to the fellowship, it's easy to forget that the purpose of our community is not to give each other exactly what we want. The purpose is to meet each of us where we are on our journey, but not let us stay there. The purpose is to help us each transform, deepen, and grow, and that is rarely comfortable. Our fourth Unitarian Universalist principle calls us to freedom and responsibility, to accountability, to commit to calling each other in rather than out when we need to learn and grow. And when we receive that feedback, when we are called back in, that something we said or did caused harm, this principle of responsibility calls us to a practice of humility and apology, not defensiveness. Now, I realize this isn't always easy. It's never comfortable. But it is truly what will allow us to continue in covenant together with freedom and responsibility. Amen. And may it be so.